Edition of Sports Club, this one entitled Planting Seeds. No, it's not about gardening. I'm your amazing host, Jeremy the Impact York. Welcome in as we are getting into the thick of the XFL season. Of course, I will give my game-by-game analysis of that here in a short few. Some other things I want to get into first, but before I do that, as we made the announcement on this week's board check, which should be out and available at this point. It should be. If it's not, let me know. The last hockey game of the year that we will more than likely attend, I'm still not sure how many of us will attend that, will be this Sunday as the Swamp Rabbits will visit the Gladiators here in Atlanta. 2 p.m. puck drop on that. And also this Saturday morning, one thing I know is happening is I will be running the 5K for the Atlanta Mission to help end homelessness in Atlanta. That will be out near the World of Coke. That will be bright and early. There's a chance I might could do a drop by afterwards. Still kind of maybe playing that one by ear. Drop by afterwards at the Brew House, where they will be having a watch party for the Barcelona league game on Saturday. I think that's around 10. But those are places you can catch us this weekend if you would like to say hello, meet us. Even though I will probably not be that presentable if you catch me at the race, same thing applies. Take a selfie, tag us, put it on social media, and we will send you some swag. Now, let's move into some little bit of small things there that I'm going to talk about, and then we'll move into XFL. Let's go right into the Astros thing, because I want to get it out of the way. I want to get some of the negativity gone. We all know the Astros were caught cheating. They were finding ways to tip off the batter as to what pitch was coming based off video surveillance that they were exploiting. Sometimes it included whistling to let them know what a pitch may be. They found evidence of that. They have found evidence of banging a trash can to alert the batter as to what pitch could be coming next. They figured that one out. There's some other things. We all know at this point that the players are not going to be punished based off of it. They have some sort of immunity. Who knows what Rob Manfred either struck a deal or got him to agree to talk, or maybe he just decided not to go after the players. I don't know. Maybe somebody tipped him off that it wasn't a good idea. I don't know. What I do know is that Jeff Lunau and AJ Hinch were both canned because of it. Okay. I do know that the owner has not made the world's best statements. Yeah, I think he's kind of a loon. And at the moment, they are still recognized as 2017 World Series champions. Maybe that changes. I doubt it. I think it's kind of hard to double punish somebody because they'll try to come back and do something. Manfred has found a way to tick off some of the players, including a couple Dodgers and others. A lot of people have speculated that means that when opposing teams face the Astros, they will potentially throw at, especially those rib shots throw at some of the batters. I could see that. I don't condone such because I think using a projectile as a weapon is not a way to conduct business. I understand that is a way that baseball players police themselves, in the same way that hockey players will go after each other because of bad hits or conduct or play. I get that. Just don't condone it. But I guess you do it a couple times, you'll get your message across that you didn't appreciate what happened. Well, like I said, I don't condone it, but I definitely think it's going to happen. Was their punishment fair? Well, they got fined like $32 million or something like that. I guess that's like a million to everybody. I don't know. They get to keep the World Series title at the moment. They were just going to suspend the head coach and the GM, but the owner decided to go ahead and fire him. This is all stuff you guys should know at this point. The thing to keep in mind, and people have finally mentioned it, I believe Rich Eisen mentioned it as well, is we're not done with this stuff. First of all, we're not going to be done because Altuve was the MVP that year. A lot of people not sure if he deserves that at that point. Hey, it is what it is. You can take it from him, but you can't give it to somebody else. You know, when Reggie Bush had to give his Heisman back, they didn't give it to Vince Young, who was the runner-up that year. In college basketball, when they take some of the banners out of the rafters because of ineligibility or violations, they don't give those to other people. So, you know, get that out of the way. This will live with these players. It's going to be the scarlet letter, which I think is the best analogy of all this. And the other thing to remember is now that they've looked into and investigated the Astros from 2017, now they move on to the Boston Red Sox of 2018, which means Alex Cora, who has already been fired by them, is probably going to get, I would say, a bigger suspension than that, because he's been a part of both. But I think this had to do with the smartwatches and some of the other stuff, and this is just going to be a bigger mess at this point. Just a bigger mess. But then again, this has added excitement to baseball. It's made me look forward to it this much earlier. Usually I don't really look forward to baseball until about May. But at this point, I'm looking forward to it. First of all, I want to see how the Astros interact with other teams, especially the Yankees, especially the Dodgers, and also keep this in mind. Last part I'm going to really say about it, this year's All-Star Game, guess where that is going to take place? Dodger Stadium. So there's two plans of thought here. And that, of course, would be, do you purposely not vote Astro players in as a punishment, which is possible, or do you try to vote in a handful more of them so that they have to walk into Dodger Stadium and face that? Yeah, to me, that would punish other players by purposely making sure to vote in a lot more of those. I'm going to go ahead and say what you should probably do. Is just vote accordingly. If you want to keep them out, you want to keep them in, that's on you. But like I said, now we got to wait and see what they do to the Red Sox, because they're apparently a couple years behind on their scandals. Other note I want to get into, I want to talk the NBA a little bit. I know the Hawks are currently playing right now. They were trailing just a few minutes ago. They are playing in Atlanta, playing against the Heat. They were trailing by a couple after one quarter of play, right before we went on to do this show. And also, our All-Star Trae Young, the All-Star game was pretty cool. You know, dunk contest, slightly controversial, but interesting. Three-point contest, about what we thought, right? And then the actual game, you know, you play three quarters normal, and then the fourth, it's first to this total thing. Okay. That makes a little bit of sense. But I want to talk about Trae Young. Trae Young, he had the fantastic, they're calling it a nutmeg or something. Basically, what he's been doing most of the year anyway, throwing it between the legs of defenders and then going to the hoop with it. He did it on James Harden. Not really known for his defense that much, but he did it to James Harden. I think that's a good moment for a second-year player like that. And also, he had a pretty good stat line. He played 20 minutes in the All-Star game. He had one steal. He had seven assists. He had four rebounds. He had 18 points. What else could you possibly ask for out of a second-year star at an All-Star game? People are starting to figure him out, though. People are starting to see. Not really figure him out. People are starting to notice that Trae Young is one of the next big stars. But congratulations to him on not only making the All-Star game, but making a pretty good showing why he was there. Atlanta United news. Let's get into them real quick. Atlanta United, last Tuesday, or this past Tuesday, rather, went down to Motagua, where the CONCACAF, I believe, or is this the... I get all these confused. I really... There's so many different ones. I'll have somebody look this up while we are talking. But they tied 1-1. That is called a draw, a 1-1 draw in soccer. And the second leg of this matchup will feature same two teams, as Motagua will come to Mercedes-Benz Stadium next Tuesday, 8 p.m. kickoff on that one. It's pretty much winner take all at that point, because you got the away goal and things like that. There are some other technicalities as far as, or how they could lose, rather, because away goals do count pretty well. So if you come down to some kind of crazy tiebreaker, and if it was a 2-2 draw here, well, Motagua would have two away goals. Atlanta would have one. If that was the tiebreaker, Atlanta would lose. I do think they're going to come here and they're going to take care of business. This is the CONCACAF, I believe. CONCACAF. I think it's the CONCACAF champ. But it should be a good one. It being on a Tuesday, good chance I'll be able to catch that one. I'm not sure what channels that particular thing may be on. My guess is, since Atlanta would be in charge of the broadcasting because they are the home team, I would imagine FS1 because of college basketball, or some sort of Soccer Plus. I don't think ESPN is going to carry it there. Not seeing right now what channel it could be on, but if I find out, I will post it up. And also if you tune into the soccer down here, guys, Jason, John, and Jarrett, that always do a good job, and they will be on top of it as well. Those would be the people I would check out. But there's all the non-football football stuff I really wanted to get into. Of course, we got the combine coming up, I believe. Next week? That sounds right. It's all going to be primetime. It's Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I don't think Sunday. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, I believe. It starts with the quarterbacks. And, of course, good luck to Rich Eisen on his run. And beyond that, it's all theories right now. You guys all know the theories. We talked about some of them last week. But now, I want to get into some XFL. I'm down to two teams that I'm potentially looking at being a fan of. I'm a fan of the whole league. Let's put it that way. I like all eight teams. But I am going to eventually side with one or the other. But let's start by the reason why it's called Planting Seeds today, one of today's episode, is because that's what the XFL is doing. They are planting these seeds, and some are starting to sprout, some are starting to glow, some are starting to grow. Let's start with the first game. The New York Guardians were at the DC Defenders. Steve Levy and Greg McElroy were on the call for this game. It was ABC. The Greg McElroy kind of bump in. It was kind of a lead in, kind of like Collinsworth does. But it was a bump in. Was a little entertaining. It was pretty funny. Of course, you got Cardale Jones of DC and Matt McGloin of New York. One had a much better day than the other, even though neither were terrible. Let's see, Cardale to Tompkins at the back right corner of the end zone. That was on a rope. One of the best throws I have seen in the XFL yet. By far, that was touchdown. That was 7-0 DC at that point. It was a nice fake punt by New York to keep the momentum going. Just some crazy physical play. Just bodies everywhere at one point. But DC recovered a fumble. And on the ensuing drive, Rauza with a 27-yard field goal. That made it 9-0 at that point. I guess it says 7-0. It was 6-0 at that point. 9-0. McGloin started forcing passes, trying to will him back into it. And then he throws the interception. The Defenders just had all the momentum. Rauza with another field goal made it 12-0. DC before the before halftime. That was a 36-yarder for him on that. And actually a pick six by DC. The guy just jumped the route, and the pass just kind of floated up on there. Made it 18-0 going into the second half. DC pass was tipped. Interception was deep in the zone. They were knocking on the door, putting another score in. Eventually, it come back around to where Rauza hit a 26-yard field goal, 21-0 at that point. New York put in Marquise Williams after some communication issues. McGloin was actually by himself on the sideline. I'll get more into that in a minute. New York missed communication. It was very apparent and very terrible. DC scored late, made it 27-0. That particular throw, those were the two best throws all day. by far the two best throws of the day. From Cardale Jones, he had a pretty decent day. Like I said, he had two fantastic throws. And he had some pretty good stuff in between there. He's emerging as a guy people are really into. But the most entertaining thing of the whole day was not the offense by DC. It was the fact that between the offensive coordinator, the head coach, and the starting quarterback, I don't know that either of the three were ever on the same page at all. And boy, and the best part is, remember, a lot of these guys are mic'd up. So we heard a lot of these conversations. In fact, you know, after throwing an interception, McGloin comes to the sideline. One thing in the XFL, they immediately put a microphone in your face, to which he said, I've been telling about this call, all the play calls and these kinds of strategies since December, and they haven't changed anything yet, and he kept kind of railing on them. Like I said, their head coach kind of talked to him for a minute and calmed down a little bit, and then he benched him. So I'm sure this is just going to go swimmingly going into this week. But if I'm not mistaken, that puts New York at 0-2, D.C. at 2-0. D.C. is emerging. They're one of the teams I'm looking at, and they're emerging as one of the fan favorites in the league. A lot of people highly enjoy the things they do. That led us into the second game. Tampa Bay, the Vipers, at the Seattle the Dragons. Very cool logos. Very, in fact, Tampa's Vipers. Hey, I really like the color scheme they use. Of course, that was Mark Trestman versus Jim Zorn in this particular one. Kurt Menefee and Joel Klatt on the call. Taylor Cornelius getting his first start for Tampa Bay because Aaron Murray hurt his foot. And might as well give somebody else a shot. Brandon Silvers for Seattle. I've talked a lot about him. Big fan of Brandon Silvers. Cornelius was just a little overexcited early. He was sailing some throws. He was bouncing a couple. Just seemed a little jittery. He threw the first interception. He kind of hit as he threw, which kind of made the ball kind of float up there. And when it floated, it went. It just kind of hung there. At one point, Quentin Flowers came in for Tampa Bay. It didn't get much better. He did a little better. He was actually getting yards and getting progress, but still hard for them to really latch on and get something good going. They've kind of been off to a rough start so far. But I think Tampa's close to flipping that switch. The defense was winning the first quarter. It was 0-0. Just a lot of pressure and a lot of quick actions, making people react quicker than they wanted to. I think it was Ernesto Leray or something like that. Hit 48-yard field goal, was no good. Andrew Frank's 36-yard field goal was good. It was 3-0 Tampa Bay at one point. That led us into halftime. In the second quarter, or second half rather, Seattle finds a ground attack. They start pounding the ball. And then the interception by Tampa Bay. It was McFadden who did that. Pick six. It made it 9-0 Tampa. Brandon Silvers found Keenan Reynolds. Yep, Keenan Reynolds from Navy was the quarterback at Navy just last year. For 68 yards and a touchdown. That made it 9-6. Tampa Bay still holding the early lead. It was a 2-yard interception pick six by Seattle. The 2-point conversion was good. It's now 14-9 Seattle. And by 2 yards, no joke, they, for some reason, he tried to force the throw, and the defender just jumped up to block it, and he basically handed it to him in his arms while he was in the air, and he just jumped into the end zone. It was just a bizarre play. But then Tampa Bay started to find a rhythm a little bit with Williams at quarterback, and then they took him out. So they ended up bobbling a field goal snap. Was a turnover on downs at that point. Tampa Bay was driving late. They had the 4th and 8 near midfield with 2:30 to go. Game ends up ending on an interception on the 30-yard line Hail Mary, or a 30-yard Hail Mary by Tampa Bay. Seattle wins that one 14-9. Seattle continues to roll. They've got a wicked following. They play where the Seahawks do. Yeah, standing room only on the lower bowl. Standing room only. That's incredible. I think the Sounders also play there. That moved us to the first Sunday game, which was the. Let's see, they are the Dallas Renegades, I believe, at the LA Wildcats. This is a good game, real good game. A couple really good endings on some games. That last game so far was one of the better endings. It was Tom Hart and Joey Galloway on the call. Joey Galloway, sneaky good commentary. Of course, that means we got to see Landry Jones for the first time, making his debut for Dallas. Josh Johnson making his debut for LA. Both were dinged up last week. We get to see two guys who have started in Bob Stoops, of course, and Winston Moss on are the coaches. LA offense was a lot better with Josh Johnson. It seems like the offense was geared around Josh Johnson. So last week when he wasn't in, the backup, it just some things weren't clicking. Great pressure by the LA defense caused Landry to throw an interception. There was a costly L.A. turnover, which gave the ball right back to Dallas. Then the L.A. defense causes another turnover. At one point, it was just turnover central. Nick Novak attempted the 47-yard field goal, made it 3-0 L.A. Dallas just started grinding out drives, just taking up clock time, taking up space on the field, and was 3-0 at halftime. Then the 41-yard field goal to open up the second half made it 3-3. That was McGinnis who kicked that one. LA had a big drive with some chances. It ended with a 50-yard field goal, which was no good by Novak. Just a little to the left. Landry threw another wide-open interception. I don't know if it just floated on him or what, but it wasn't the world's best throw. LA offense has another fumble near the end zone. It seemed like every time they got close, something goofy would happen. Dallas takes over. There was a couple missed big shots. Led to a 45-yard field goal where Dallas took the 6-3 lead. LA started taking shots down the field. They weren't connecting, but they were getting pass interference calls, which is practically as good. All those in their favor, they were trying to turn the momentum around. They were doing a good job of it. Both offenses were moving the ball, just not scoring. A lot of yardage in this one. In fact, Landry Jones was the first quarterback to throw for over 300 yards in the XFL. 305 for this game in particular. That was a hell of a throw by Josh Johnson, who found Spruce for the touchdown. Made it 9-6 LA. Artis Payne had a touchdown run. You guys might remember him from Auburn. Dude can run. Conversion of 1 point was good. That made it 13-9 Dallas. Landry found Parham for the touchdown. That made it 19-9. There was a great return by the Wildcats that led to a Josh Johnson finding Nelson Spruce bomb on the first play. They went for the 3-point play. It was good. from 5 yards because it normally would be the 10, but there was a penalty on the defense, so it made it on the 5. Where J.J. Josh Johnson found Jennings, I believe, on the conversion. That made it 19-18, Dallas. That's where that 9-point play comes in. With 4:37 to go, Artis Payne had just a fantastic, just thing of beauty, touchdown run. That made it 25-18. And Dallas with 106 to go. A turnover on downs near midfield by L.A. gave us our final. Dallas 25, L.A. 18. Truth be known, L.A. is the other team I am currently looking at. I have it between D.C. and Dallas. I mean, D.C. and L.A. I say I like all 8 teams for various things. As far as who I'm going to pull for, and L.A. kind of came out of nowhere. They were not on my radar coming into this. And I'm not so distant third. I can see what Tampa has brewing, and I like a lot of things Tampa's doing, but they would definitely be third on my list. After this week, I'll pick a side, promise. Last game of the day. The St. Louis Battlehawks took on the Houston... What is Houston? Houston is the... There we go. The Roughnecks. There we go. The Houston Roughnecks. Another good game. Outside of the first game, the other three were great. You had Kevin Burkhart, and you had Greg Olson. Greg Olson, who, thing I forgot to mention, signed a 1-year, $7 million deal with the Seattle Seahawks the other day. Congratulations to him on that. Fantasy pickup. That would be one. Russell is going to love having Greg Olson, who is a grinder. Of course, that meant it was Jordan Tamu, or Tiamu, I think that's how you say it, and P.J. Walker. Jonathan Hayes and June Jones are your coaches for those prospective squads. Sergio Castillo, 44-yard field goal, made it 3-0. Houston early. St. Louis was finding some big plays in the air after setting up the run game early. They would run, and all of a sudden, boom, big pass play. That's how you draw it up. Tiamu to Matt Jones for the touchdown. Then P.J. Walker found Phillips for the Houston touchdown. The 2-point attempt was just short. That was 9-6 Houston at this point. Late in the first, Nick Fitzgerald was in at quarterback for St. Louis for a key third down kind of RPO run past option thing there. Wasn't sure why they put him in. Now, he's good at that kind of stuff, but just it seemed like the quarterback was doing fine. But the action kind of slowed at this point. So, defenses were standing strong overall. Then you had the Cody Brown interception of the Battle Hawks. The very next play, James Butler ran a touchdown in to make it 15-6 Houston. St. Louis had a turnover on downs after a long drive. It takes some wind out of your sails. P.J. Walker found Phillips again for a touchdown, 21-6 Houston, with a minute 53 left in the game. Going into the second half, we're finally in the second half. St. Louis started really airing it out. They were really trying to be a battle hawk, which I believe is a type of fighter jet. Could be wrong. Let's see, where is that? Tiamu to Pearson L for the touchdown. The 2-point was no good. That made it 21-12. He rushed it, did, making it 21-18. Houston with just a 3-point lead. St. Louis got backed up to the half-yard line. They found a way out. They just kept, they started grinding too. Jeremiah Johnson interception crushes the St. Louis drive, which had a huge return with it. P.J. Walker found Phillips for a third time, the hat trick of touchdowns. The one-point rush attempt was good. That made it 28-18 Houston. And Tiamu found Washington late to make it 28-24. That ended up being your final as Houston picks up the win at home over St. Louis. Now, I am going to real quickly try to see if I can find the standings that we just had up a minute ago and suddenly they disappeared. See if we can get those up. Because, yes, this is only after 2 weeks, but you're seeing some emergence of some big people. Like I said, especially the quarterbacks. People knew Cardell Jones. People knew Landry Jones. People know Josh Johnson, but you're getting P.J. Walker, who is breaking out. Jordan Tiamu is breaking out. All these people are really starting to break out. Here we go. In the East, you got the D.C. Defenders at 2-0. You got the Battlehawks at 1-1 of St. Louis and the New York Guardians at 1-1 as well. The Tampa Bay Vipers at 0-2. But once again, that's only a two-game swing. And it looks the exact same in the West. You have the Houston Roughnecks who are 2-0. You have the Seattle Dragons at 1-1. You have the Dallas Renegades at 1-1. And the LA Wildcats at 0-2. If you guys aren't watching the XFL, then you are missing out. It's going into week four, and I got the schedule right here in front of me. Going into week four, you got to watch these games. At 2 o'clock on Saturday, the LA Wildcats are going to travel to New York to take on the Guardians. That's on ABC. At 5 o'clock, the Seattle Dragons are going to travel to St. Louis to take on the Battle Hawks. That's a Fox game. On Sunday, they've moved the games up back a little bit. Just to help you out. On Sunday, the Houston Roughnecks are going to travel to take on the Renegades of Dallas at 4 p.m. It's an FS1 game. And finally, at 7 p.m., the home opener for the Tampa Bay Vipers as they welcome in the D.C. Defenders. That is an ESPN2 game. The XFL, guys, catch on. You got to catch the fever of it. It is fantastic to watch. It is easy to get in on the action. Fun to get behind these players. I was talking to some local fans, and they said, well, there's not a team here, so it's hard for me to get into. To which I reminded them, I tried to get them into the AAF, and we had a team here, and they didn't want to get into it. So I was like, it is what it is. But if I got into it. I didn't dive head first. I let it organically grow on me a little bit, and man, it did. But that's going to do it for us this week. Shout out to everyone who allows us to come on each and every week and talk every sport under the sun, XFL, MLB, NBA, MLS, NFL, all kinds of fun stuff coming up too in the future. Don't forget, if you want to hang out this week or try to catch us anywhere, Saturday morning, I will be near the World of Coke for the Atlanta Mission run to end homelessness. 5K, the chance maybe for a drop by at the brew house to watch the Barcelona game. And then on Sunday, I know a couple of us, not sure exactly how many, couple of us will be at the Atlanta Gladiator Greenville Swamp Rabbit game at 2 out in at the Infinite Energy Center in Duluth. But I am Jeremy the Impact York. Thanks for tuning in to Sports Club Planting Seeds. We will see you guys next week. go watch the XFL. So let's play, yeah. I'm taking the game, the game's mine. Yeah, I witness the change, it's my time. Yeah, I'm new to the game, but y'all might wanna say you whack raps, daylight saving time. I can dance, homie, I don't two-step. Y'all looking at something like a true player. A girl told me that a man that can dance might can possibly get down with the tool in his pan. Now I'ma ladies, let me see it vibrate. And when it's over, you ain't gon' need your bow. Cause I'm a pro, make you bend your back low, then the pound of real bad, just like the percolate. Wobble, baby, wobble, baby, wobble, baby, wobble, yeah. 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 Get it now. The girls say, man, like they never rockin' shit. Damn, I'm so explicit, but I can't help it, my flow ridiculous. Boy, got a gift like it gotta be Christmas. Swag on this like it gotta be gifted. The girls brought cameras, and they want pictures, and they gon' frame them. See that? Let them to the bed while I'm saying my scriptures. Cause I leave you holy like you pray in the temple. One beat, I move with the letter of a pencil. And mine won't miss you, good night kiss you. Take a damn back, cause you got pistol. And I don't think Donnie pick her up these issues. Wobble baby, wobble baby, wobble baby, wobble.